So good evening again, Sangha. I am so happy to be back with you virtually at Marin Sangha. I was with you all in person a few years ago. We were chatting before we began this evening and remembering when I came as a guest of Philip Moffat to sit with your Sangha, which was in January of 2020. I was teaching, I live on the East Coast and I was out west teaching and at Spirit Rock and teaching some other places, and also wanted to spend some time with Philip, who's been a mentor of mine for many years. And so I ended up being out in California for about a month. And so Philip is giving a talk at Marin Sangha and asked me to come along and to meet this Sangha. And I have to say, I was really moved by something that I witnessed that you all do that I've never seen at any other Sangha in the country. Is that we walked into the space and there was a table full of little index cards and some pens. And everyone knew to go over there and to write, like a metta blessing. And then at the end, it was offered to someone and they read them all out loud. And I was so moved by that. I'd never seen metta utilized in such a just a full and robust way by an entire sangha. It was like you all had decided to come together. It's so rare for a sangha to like collectively decide that this is what we do. This is one of our core values. It's what we believe in. It's who we are. And we're going to make sure that people know that we have this practice here at the core of our hearts. It was a beautiful opportunity for the sangha to know who was at home with a cold. And it also brought those who had been absent for a while because of prolonged illness to be directly in our hearts and minds. Reminded them and us, that they were not forgotten. And I thought it was so beautiful. And, not even knowing these people, I was just so moved by this practice of kindness and benevolence. And even though I didn't know the people that metta was being offered to, it was this practice was so palpable in the room, I could feel it. And I also wondered, is my metta like your metta? And what about your metta? Is my metta like your metta? And that was something that I was sitting in and thinking about because my metta has fists. And I was wondering, does your metta also have fists? I didn't know. And so I've had a really long journey on this path to metta. And in fact, one of the very first talks that I wrote was called I Hate Metta. And not because I'm a monster, not because, I have a heart of steel that I couldn't feel it. But because, I learned this practice through these classic phrases, may you be happy, may you be healthy, may you be safe, and may you live with ease. And though I got metta, like I got understood it, I saw people have really profound experiences with it. Like I knew that it's a really powerful practice. This wasn't going to be the right door for me to truly know it for myself. Like using these phrases wasn't quite the right way for me to access them and to know them for myself. And for a long time, over probably 12 years in New York City, I shared practice with really vulnerable populations. And though my heart and my full body wanted these aspirations of health and happiness for them, the phrases kept me in my head and away from my heart, really disconnected me from my heart. And I thought, how can I say, may you be happy to a kid who was locked up and away from his family? may you be healthy to someone who is living with HIV and AIDS. May you be safe to someone who is experiencing homelessness. May you live with ease to someone who is living with addiction. These were the populations I was working with, and even though my heart wanted those things and I showed up, you know, every week to do my heart work with them, I couldn't quite teach metta through these phrases. And then I remember the Karaniya Metta Sutta and how deeply those words resonated with me. Especially, so with a boundless heart, should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downward to the depths, outwards and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will. And I see some of you mouthing along with me. It's a powerful sutta, right? These teachings, the Buddhist teachings on loving kindness. And that was it for me. I began to understand that these practices of benevolence and kindness were not meant to be trapped inside these phrases, but were meant to feel boundless. And that it radiated above and below, unbounded. Being able to let go of the structure, the tightness that I had around wanting to get the phrases right, allowed me to know metta. And my metta had fists. It wasn't just about the good feeling that generated in my heart and flowed outwards. It was also a practice of a protection. And one of my favorite stories, excuse me. One of my favorite stories in the Buddha's teachings is when he offered this practice of metta to his ascetics. And so apparently, you know, they were traveling as they do, and the Buddha had instructed his ascetics to go into the forest and to practice. And so they went there and they tried, but the tree devas were going, woo. I don't know what sound tree devas make, but apparently they're making these like really scary sounds, and they were emitting these horrible odors, and they were, you know, shaking the trees. And so the monks or the ascetics got terrified, and they came running out of the forest, and they told the Buddha, we can't practice there. It's terrifying. These tree devas are so scary. We can't possibly practice. And so he gave them the practice of metta as a practice of protection. He didn't give them this practice to change who the devas were, to, you know, shame the devas into being nicer to the poor ascetics. Because he understood that we don't have autonomy over another being. We can't tell them what to do, what to think, how to be. We've tried and it doesn't work, right? And so what the Buddha said was that we can change the quality of our hearts. We can protect our hearts and minds from living in fear. Because when we begin to feel fear in our bodies, that's when we begin to shut down and disconnect from other sentient beings. And so he gave them the practice of metta to be this protective barrier around their hearts so they didn't slip into fear, into hate, into greed, into delusion. And I've noticed that for myself when I'm watching the news and I'm furious at what I'm seeing. I am heartbroken at what I'm seeing. I'm feeling this rage and anger and sometimes even hatred. I'm feeling that person's whatever energy they're getting off, I'm starting to embody it myself. And that's when I know that it's time for me to practice metta, because metta can protect me from that, from slipping into those three poisons of greed, hatred, and delusion. I was sharing the practice of metta with somebody I was mentoring about a year ago. And as we were talking about our experience with metta, and she also had sort of a rough entry point into it, she said that she learned that for her, she thought that metta was sort of undermining her practice, sort of getting in the way of like her real practice. And she said in practicing in this more expansive view, that metta became the thing that was no longer undermining her practice, but actually became the underpinning of her practice. And I would say that's been my truth as well. So it's been really helpful for me to think of metta as having these two branches, one of benevolence and kindness and friendliness, this loving kindness that we often hear about. And also that second branch of this fierce protection that reminds me that we belong to each other. And the moment that I meet fear with fear or anger with anger, that I've allowed that venom to enter into my heart. And so metta is a practice that allows my heart to see that tipping point and to choose how to respond. And so I'm really curious as to how you experience metta, what your metta looks like. How do you know it? How do you feel it? How do you experience it in your own lived experience? Has your entry been through the phases, and has that really worked for you? Have you worked with the Karaniya Metta Sutta and thought about that one line as, you know, as a mother protects their child, their only child? Is that how you've known and experienced metta? Do you utilize it as a practice of protection or as a practice of loving kindness and benevolence? And so I feel that when I offer a Dharma talk, that is not really complete until I hear from the Sangha, to hear about you are experiencing and knowing these practices for yourself. And I also know that for me, after a Dharma talk, I like to pause and reflect and sort of digest what I've heard. And so we'll take about a 5-minute break. And in this time, you can do a journaling practice. You can a moving practice. I know that after hearing a talk, I want to get up and move the energy so I can actually digest and feel the words kind of move and live in my body. You can sit in quiet contemplation. You can lie down and allow the earth to hold you. As we take a moment to really contemplate how we know this practice of metta, how do we experience it? How do we know when it's present? How do we know when it's absent? And then we'll come back together and we'll open up the floor into wisdom democracy for us to really share our wisdom with each other. Does that sound like a good plan? All right. And so I have 3 minutes till, so we'll come back. Let's make it even, because I can't do math very well. So let's come back at 5 after the next hour, and that'll give you time also to get a glass of water, whatever else that you need to take care of yourselves. All right? And so I'll see you in a few minutes.
We go.
No problem. Well, you just missed this, and that's the secret of life. Not recorded. Ha. So how about I think Patty has her hand up next.
Thank you, Booker. I just wanted to respond to Vita because I think I said this before, maybe in this group, maybe in other groups. I find meta helpful in one of the phrases that Philip taught me, because sending love to certain people is just beyond me. I am very angry at certain people and the way certain things are being done in the world. And it's very hard for me to send loving kindness to people that I just want to shake into sense, make sense of them by like screaming at them. But I find it easy to wish them a calm, clear mind and a peaceful, loving heart. And so that phrase helps me a lot because it's hard to send love to somebody who's causing so much damage in the world. But I can say, may your heart soften, may your mind be clear. And so it's almost like wishing out loud that the other person changed, but it keeps me from screaming at the television. I can turn off the news or fold the paper and put it away, but my heart is still riled up by the ugliness out there. And rather than stay in that riled up place, I can wish those leaders a calm, clear mind and a peaceful, loving heart. I'm sort of inspired by my friend from the South who always used to say, well, bless her heart. Whenever she heard some really sad, terrible news about somebody, instead of saying, oh my God, how could she? I'm from New York too. And my response is, you've got to be kidding me. How the hell could she do that? I've learned to say or think, bless her heart, but my language is, may she have a calm, clear mind and a peaceful, loving heart. So I thank Philip for that language, and that helps me keep metta foremost in my practice.
Oh,
Yeah, go ahead, Peter.
just to clarify, I have no problem in giving and sending metta in one way or another, even and frequently use Philip's phrases, of course. I have no sending metta to other people is not my issue, but the thought of metta to myself as protection from greed, hatred. I mean, I love the concept. I just don't know if I just have to think on it. But sending metta is never an issue, even to those people.
It usually is the receiving. It usually is the receiving that kind of gets stuck. I get stuck. Yeah.
And thank you, Patty. And thank you.
Yeah. And again, there's that conditioning that says that we're supposed to be giving, 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 but how dare we receive, right? So that's part of our conditioning as well. That kind of interrupts and gets in the way of us receiving. So yeah, and I'm from the South. I lived in New York for over 20 years. So I often say, well, bless her heart. So I'm very familiar with that phrase. It's a very useful phrase. And I really love, Philip's phrasing as well, because again, a lot of people don't deserve my loving kindness. They simply don't, right? But what they do deserve is I wish them a calm mind, because if they have a calm mind, maybe they won't blow up a bunch of people, right? And so I wish them clarity in their heart. I wish them a softness in their heart. I wish them to feel a sense of humanity. So that could also be another flavor of our metta. So thank you for bringing Philip into this space and his wonderful phrases. I'd like to invite V to share. And I'm sorry, V. Patty, was there anything else? I just want to check in. You feel complete? Okay, thank you. And V, go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you so much for this teaching and this opportunity. I found this teaching through your Instagram feed, and I'm so feel like a guest, and I'm very happy to be here. I sort of My response to your question about how I practice metta is I often sort of conflate empathy and metta together. And when I have empathy for others, I can very easily wish them metta. And I like the previous speaker really helped me with the calm, clear heart, because I do get into that place of like, you know, one of the traditions that I've learned is, you know, you think of somebody that you love, and then somebody who is neutral, and then somebody who is difficult. And I'm often told, sort of in a guided meditation, that, you know, the person who is difficult, you don't need to know what their happiness looks like. You just need to know that if they are happier, the world would be a better place. But my brain immediately goes, you know, I want to legislate like what their happiness looks like. Because I have some very strong ideas about what people's happiness should look like. And letting go of that is the work that I'm doing. So I just sort of, that's my little bit.
Yeah, thank you. I know people have been using the word legislate a lot lately, and I just find it hilarious. That's what's coming up, is coming at me during Dharma talks. But yeah, that's what's in the air, right? And you know what you're speaking about kind of sounds a little bit more like that equanimity. It's like, right, like how do we have that, just that sense of you know, that sense of stillness. There's chaos around us, and we don't exactly have to react in this moment. We can be in the stillness for a moment and figure out how to respond with clarity, with a calm mind and heart, right? Yeah. And again, these all, they're so closely related. And so it sounds like that practice of equanimity, you know, resolve to be equanimous can lead you to metta, right? And so again, I love that these practices, like they really, they kind of swim around and really rely on each other. You can't just do one by themselves. You have to explore the other ones to get you there. Thank you so much. Bowman.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Booker. This is it's a great talk, and it's really, I love the concept of warding off greed, hatred, and delusion with metta practice. I also practice with a sangha here in Roswell, Georgia. And the teacher is Lisa Story, and she taught us, she sings metta with us. She taught us a song from a family retreat that had children, and so it's really a wonderful song that really opens the heart and shares the metta practice with everyone. So I'll try to do the phrases some justice. There's three phrases, and we sing the first two three times, and then the last one just once. So these are the three phrases. May I be filled with loving kindness. May I be well. May I be peaceful and at ease. May I be happy. May you be filled with loving kindness. May you be well. May you be peaceful and at ease. May you be happy. And then the final verse is, may we be filled with loving kindness. May we be well. May we be peaceful and at ease. May we be happy. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, and sometimes our Dharma door is song, right? It's gonna help that bringing our voices together. I learned that at Blue Cliff Monastery, is Thich Nhat Hanh's monastery in upstate New York. That's been one of my favorites. Yeah, thank you so much for bringing that in. So we'll hear from Lisa, and then Mary, and then we will close our evening with a little bit more metta. So go ahead.
Hello. I was very struck by, I'm also not someone who's been great at sending metta to people. I'm intensely angry and outraged by their behavior. And, you know, I've been a therapist forever, and it's like, okay, you can love the person and not the behavior. But, you know, when it's on the world stage and it involves violence and murder and trauma and abuse, it's just very hard to hold equanimity and all of that good stuff. But I was really surprised tonight, as I started out with my own practices of self-soothing and well-being, which is, you know, really to imagine my core lighting up, you know, and having gentle light permeate me. And then I just found myself reaching out to Putin and just sending peace, loving kindness to that core of him and just saying, where is your humanity? Where is your humanity? And understanding that it's piled under, you know, just layers and layers of darkness and everything that goes with that. But for the first time, I just wasn't hooked by all of that and just went, we've got to reach him. And I just kept saying, you know, you can it's not too late to rejoin the world and be a partner. You can't rule the world. That's true. Like if you're still holding on to that, it's really not going to work. But, you know, it's not too late to turn back to the light and be one of us and connect with us. And please, where's your humanity? So that's what came.
Thank you so much for that. Yeah, so we're giving metta to the humanity within the person, right? Beautiful. And Mary.
So the phrases that Bowman sang are ones that are in the book, A Path with Heart. Mm. It's one of them. And for me, it's, that's kind of like my, that's something that those phrases are ones that just kind of drop in. And for me, metta is a very felt sense. It's may you be filled with loving kindness. And it is an energetic feeling. And it is something that actually, for me, it creates this mind-heart connection, which is open and soft. And in that way, I think it is kind of a protection, because my heart is not, it's like the subtle heart in the nine bodies that Phil talks about. I can feel that there is no contraction. So there's a real physical sense of it. And because I can actually feel it, sometimes I can feel it, like almost my whole body is like bathed in it. It is one of those things where he talked about it. It's like, it is a support for equanimity. And so they sit together so that even if there's other emotions or things that are going on that are unpleasant, that there is a resting place for them within that whole energetic space that I can be with them. And not to say that it always happens, but it is. It's because that practice is one where I say, may I be filled with loving kindness. And I can just stop and say that to myself and actually feel it's like coming from someplace and I'm getting it. And I'm very grateful for that because I have a gratitude practice. But it is a very felt sense and it really helps keep me connected to my core values. And when I'm feeling contracted, then I know that it's not there. And I can just feel that as a reminder so that, you know, people, news, or anything like that. And I agree. I think it's, you know, if I know that everyone is walking around with a wound, I can't see it all the time. And I can have, my medic meet that wound with compassion, even if I really loathe what they're doing. Yeah. And for me, that's really helpful. It really is really helpful. And it, again, for me, it's very much a felt sense. So that, you know, as best as I'm able, I try to hold that space open.
Yeah. Thank you, Mary. Beautiful. So yeah, we go back to that first foundation of mindfulness of body and breath, right? So everything, you know, there's so much information in the body. Yeah. We have to just turn towards it and pay attention and to not push it away. So I appreciate that being your access door, how you're getting there and just reminding you, just giving you a sense of when the body has moved away from, and then you can feel yourself coming back in alignment with that practice. Yeah, thank you so much.